This is the Need to Know podcast from CIOps with Jeff Alexander from Microsoft. In this episode, we talk all about Windows 10. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately at www.ciops.com/publications. So just a brief intro before we get into the podcast. This podcast is a little bit longer than normal. Jeff and I do spend a bit of time talking about Windows 10, so I'll keep this intro brief. Don't forget to have a look at Cloud Business Blueprint, which I also manage, which is at www.cloudbusinessblueprint.com. You can there go there and sign up for our community and be involved with resellers learning how to get access to the cloud and also translate that into business with their customers. You can also connect to me using my Skype for Business, admin@ciaops365.com. Don't forget the iTunes reviews, really appreciate that. And again, any questions, any topics, please go to www.ciaops.com/contact and let me know your thoughts. And with that, let's get straight into the podcast. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from CIOps. My name is Robert Crane, and I'm joined by Jeff Alexander from Microsoft. Jeff, welcome.
How are you, mate?
Not too bad. It's big things happening at Microsoft at the moment.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is.
So
You might have heard of a small operating system that we've got coming called Windows 10.
Yes, yes. And then amongst all the other things that are happening, but as we always do, I think we better get you to just introduce yourself and let everybody know who you are and what role you play within Microsoft so we can build the context for today. So if you can do that, that'd be great.
Sure, no problem. My name is Jeff Alexander. I'm a senior technical evangelist at Microsoft here in Australia, based in the Microsoft Sydney office. Generally, what I focus on is enabling the community through a lot of the new technologies that Microsoft does. My background is I focus on Windows infrastructure, particularly around Windows on the client side with Windows 10, and also Windows on the server side, plus a little bit of Azure and a tiny bit of DevOps these days. But Windows 10 being the biggest focus is what I've been doing mostly over the last little while.
Cool. Well, it's good that we've got you on here so we can obviously focus on the Windows 10 side of things. So for those of people who have been living under a rock, they hopefully will now know that Windows 10 will be released to the wild on the 29th of July. A lot of people obviously have signed up for that and are good to go. I mean, what are you seeing as in, you know, the feeling out there in the public? Obviously, there's some operating systems have been, you know, well received. Some others have had challenges. Windows 10, from what I see, it's getting a lot of very positive press.
Yeah, it is. And look, I think the biggest thing is that we have involved anybody who wanted to get involved through our Insiders program this time around. If you look at the change that we had with from Windows 8 to 8.1, and look, we all can be pretty upfront about Windows 8.1 was probably ahead of its time when it was released in regards to the hardware that was available, what people could do. And it was a major UI change for people that people just were not comfortable with. So Windows 10 is a great mix of what Windows 7 has to offer and what Windows 8 had to offer as well. But we've got about, we're upwards around about 5 million insiders right now. I'm sure you've probably signed up as an insider yourself. And we've got, it's just the feedback loop that's made the difference. What you're seeing is that through the feedback app that you have in Windows 10, is you can actually provide feedback and get the things in there that you want to do. And then, you know, so that has been a big change as far as the closeness that we have with the community in regards to building the operating system. Plus, if you look at how we've developed this operating system, this is very much a DevOps practice that we've actually done in regards to pushing Windows 10 out the door. Typically, what we would do is it would take, and you know from your background, is it would be 2 to 3 years between releases or even, you know, minor feature releases of Windows in the past, right? Whereas now, we can do what we call sprints, and we can get the operating system's updates, builds out, in a far more quicker manner. And so that's been really good for us to be able to, you know, develop the operating system faster with better quality and get it out to as many people as possible early on in the piece. And that's made a huge difference in the feedback that we're getting and what people are seeing in the operating system is been very, very positive. People like the new UI. They like how it works, and there's a bunch of other things in there as well.
So obviously there's a lot of positive press out there, but let's cover off some of the most common rumors that I certainly hear out there at the moment. So the first one I hear, obviously, is that Internet Explorer is not going to be included in Windows 10, which obviously is a bit of fiction, but do you want to give us a bit of an idea of sort of what's happening around that?
Yeah, well, we have a new browser in Windows 10 that's going to be the default, which is Microsoft Edge. It was codenamed Project Spartan, and it was built from the ground up for the modern web around HTML5. And so if you look at the browser as it is today, IE11 will still be included in Windows 10 for backward compatibility cases only. Okay, so essentially what that means is that if you have, say, if you're in a small to medium business or an enterprise and you have an application that requires, say, Internet Explorer A version, like IE8 or above, then IE will be used for those particular scenarios. But for general everyday web browsing, Edge is what's going to be the browser built from the ground up to be designed for the modern web. And essentially, they built this engine. They built a new rendering engine. They built a lighter version of a browser. And it was decided that a new browser was. It was time. I think it was really. You know, IE's been out for a long, long time, and it was time for them to do something with a new browser. So. It's gotten better as it's gone along. The early builds of Project Spartan were a little rough around the edges, but you can see the changes that they're making in the latest builds of Windows 10. It's really smooth. And even if you say you're inside an organization and you go to a website that requires IE, Edge is going to let you know that, and it'll automatically take you to IE if you need it.
So will Edge be available just on Windows 10, or are they going to allow it to be installed on previous versions as well?
Just on Windows 10 at this point in time. So there's a big push to get people to upgrade to Windows 10. Their goal is to have 1 billion devices updated in the first year and a half. So the idea is, and this kind of leads into our upgrading scenario, is to make that process as easy as possible for users. Have you received an alert to reserve your copy?
Yep. Done that on a couple of machines, and
yeah, that's there's been over 1 million people that have done that. So you're one of those million or so people that have reserved your copy of upgrades. Mm-hmm. And on July 29th, you might have seen some blog posts by Terry Myerson about how we're actually going to go about doing these. Insiders will get their updates on 29th of July 1st. And then those people that have registered with the reserve their copy from a previous operating system, they will get their upgrade next. And then the process will go further on as we go forward with that.
Okay.
But yep. On the browser side of the fence, Edge is the new browser. It is the browser for the modern web. Is what they're. What they're actually saying, I guess, if you had to be annoyingly on message, that's kind of what we're actually saying in regards to that. And have you been using
Edge? I've been using both. Obviously, I've got a Windows 10 test environment to test particularly Office 365 and Azure stuff, and running the stuff in Edge as well as in Internet Explorer, which again we'll highlight come with the operating system. And look, I think they both will serve their purpose. I'm certainly tending more towards Edge because it's a cleaner interface, seems to be quicker, and again, it's got more of a modern feel, like you said. So I think more options are probably better. And it gives you this flexibility to use the tool that's best for you. And you're right, I think there's still going to be some need for the legacy IE perhaps, but going forward, we're seeing people, like I said, moving into this modern browser environment where it's, again, optimized for performance with the all the modern stuff on the web, and I think it works quite well. And from what I can see, it works well with everything that I would use, especially from the cloud. So I think it's a great option.
One thing you have to be aware of, though, is that in January of next year, January 2016, our older browsers will go out of extended support. Okay, so what we are saying to people is that by January 2016, with their deployment projects, they need to be on IE11 on Windows 7. That will help prepare them for Windows 10. So if there's cases where they actually have applications or web apps that require IE8, they need to do their work with Enterprise Mode IE, which is an option to turn on in IE11 to basically take an take a website and tell the browser that it's running on IE8. So that's the one thing that people have to be aware of when they're moving to Windows 10 is they should be on IE11 by the time we get, by 2016, January of 2016.
And I think part of this too is obviously with the world changing so quickly and the requirements to keep up to date. I mean, being able to achieve what you want to achieve requires, you know, a modern client interface to do a lot of this stuff, which everybody's beginning to accept as default. And you can't do that on, you know, obviously some of the older operating systems. And,
that's right.
And we're beginning to see lots and lots of compatibility issues with people who are electing not to upgrade or sitting on old systems. And it's like, you know, it's a factor of the world we live in that you need to keep up to date. And, you know, one of the other big things here is that, you know, Microsoft is making the Windows 10 upgrade available for free for, you know, a large majority of qualified users. So, I mean, that's a great way to incentivize people to make sure that they're on something modern that they can then work with going forward.
Yeah, I think so too. And one last point on Edge is that there was an announcement recently that we're not going to support Silverlight. When you talk about moving forward, we're moving away from Edge won't support Silverlight. So that's a consideration. We made an announcement on the MS Edge dev blog post from the blogging Windows site. There's more information about that. People can have a look at that going forward if that's a concern. And as a consequence of that, Edge won't support ActiveX controls like toolbars and browser helper objects. So that's another thing to consider. But like you said, we're kind of trying to move the industry forward because we're getting to a point that people have to move forward. And we're moving into this Windows 10 is going to be the last major release of an operating system as we know it today. When you think about how Windows was released in the past, is you'd every 2 to 3 years you'd have this major forklift upgrade that you'd have to do, right? And you'd have to it's a 18-month to 2-year project. That's not the case moving forward with Windows 10. With Windows 10, it's going to be moving to a model we call Windows as a Service. Okay, so it's going to be you're very big on Office 365, and you know that people subscribe to, if you're a home user, you subscribe to Office, and you just get your new version of Office when that comes out, right? And that's how we're going to move to Windows.
And I think, I suppose the like I said, there certainly is the trend, and there's a lot of benefits. All the people that, you know, are taking Office up through Office 365 are seeing that benefits. They're getting Skype for Business when that changed from Link. They're getting all the latest client updates happening in the background. It's always up to date. I think that part of the demographic that may be concerned about this is they've seen this change with Office 365 and the Office Now, you know, click to run deployments, and now they're seeing potentially Windows as a Service. The IT pros out there are sort of saying, well, hang on, you know, if all this stuff is updating and it's just a service, you know, where's my sort of role in this? What role do I play where I've traditionally, you know, taken a CD or downloaded an ISO and installed it and done the upgrade and all that sort of stuff? I mean, what do you see the role? Is there a transition that IT pros need to be making to move into this sort of world and begin supporting it?
Yeah, it's a look in when we talk about Windows as a service, we talk about there's a couple of things that come into that particular topic. There's first of all deployment. So how do we deploy new machines? We're going to support all the traditional methods for deploying the operating system. You know, so if IT pros today are familiar with Microsoft's deployment toolkit, MDT, if they're familiar with SCCM, our deployment, we're going to support all those standard imaging technologies that we had in the past, right? So they'll have no problems doing all their upgrades as they normally would. What we are going to lean people towards is a new paradigm shift that, when in talking to IT pros that I've spoken to recently, is what we're calling the end of wipe and reload. Now, that's a big paradigm shift from what we've done in the past, is that we're saying to people that you can confidently upgrade in place. Now, that really turns people, guys that have been deploying stuff in a traditional model, that turns their head and they're kind of really skeptical of this particular scenario. Because we've often said to people, you know, when you go to a new operating system, you rebuild the machine, right?
Yep.
Now what we're saying is that, no, you don't have to do that. For the vast majority of people that are going to move to Windows 10 is that we will support in-place upgrades. Now, what we've done is we've taken a lot of the intelligence that we had in external tools. And what I mean by that is like MDOP, the user state migration tool, the tools that you would use for deployment. And we've baked that into the operating system and we've let Windows do the work. All right. And the analogy I like to think of is think about a fried egg. All right. So your operating system sits in the yellow part and all your apps and data and all that sits along the outside. And all we do is we drop the new operating system and we into that yolk part, move everything out of the way, put the operating system, lay that image down to the machine, and then we move everything back, including registry settings. Now, I've done this probably 50, 60 times through the builds that I've had across a number of machines, and that's worked flawlessly. I haven't had to rebuild a machine from scratch. We have people that have gone into their registry internally, and they've seen the history of all the how many upgrades they've done. One guy counted his machine. He's up to 31 times he's done upgrades. And he's never rebuilt his machine. It just and a lot of people think a lot of this stuff just kind of happened in the last little while. You remember our everybody's favorite operating system, Windows Vista,
mm-hmm.
right? That's where we changed the deployment model. We moved to this WIM format for imaging machines, which was a non-destructive way of doing that. And Windows 7 had it, Windows 8 had it. And now Windows 10 takes that to a further level where we're able to actually be very modular about how we do upgrades. So most of the people will get their upgrade over Windows Update, a fairly large update, and we'll do all the machine checks from within Windows to make sure that that's there. Now, if you're an IT professional, the way that we will do this, the way we will do upgrades is that we will have different what we call rings, okay, for doing how Windows as a Service works is there's going to be different rings. So we'll have a ring for engineering internally at Microsoft, and that's where we'll do a huge amount of testing on the operating system itself. So internally, there's the OSG team, which is the operating systems group. They will do a lot of testing for the operating system, making sure that there's a lot of report, the stuff that makes sure that the builds pass a certain quality bar. That will then move to thousands and thousands of people that are on our Microsoft Elite program, which are internal employees. They will then do more quality checks of that operating system. That will then get moved to another ring, which we call the Windows Insiders. Okay, so Windows Insiders is where people can provide a lot of feedback, do all that kind of stuff. And you notice when you do the upgrade, you've done an upgrade to Windows 10, you are on the slow ring to start off with, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you do your updates and you go to settings, and you go to update and recovery and go to advanced options, you have the ability to choose the ring that you actually have. And what we do is we release builds to certain rings. And this is how the IT department is going to be able to control, because what we're going to introduce is Windows Update for Business. Okay, we've already announced that Windows Update for Business. It means that what you can do is you can have a certain number of users inside your organization on the Windows Update for Business ring, where you get updates on a slower pace. We'll still provide security updates to you, but it allows the IT professional to control how that update goes through their organization. So that what's happening is you don't have users just going, Windows Update, I'm going to pull down the latest update, right? So what we can do through group policy and through other methods is to be able to control which ring that user is actually on, and that's controlled by the IT professional, right? So we have Windows, and that'll allow us to, we have this, what the Windows Update for Business, we'll use things like WSUS, you know, the standard stuff that you guys are familiar with, to control how those updates actually happen.
And I think, again, it's interesting that, one of the fears is that, now as an IT pro, I'm no longer in control of my updates, and I was the one that patched them, and that was a service that a lot of people resold to customers under the MSP model. But I think if you look at the wider audience, if you look at the general app model, apps get updated all the time. If I look at my Xbox, I turn it on, it needs an update, I update it, and away I go. I mean, again, they are slightly different perhaps, but the world is moving to the fact where, we constantly need these things to be updated for, if nothing else, security, but also all the new features. So again, I think it's just replicating and reflecting what we're seeing happening with, modern software. So I think part of it is that, yep, the old way of doing things, that was familiar, but this is really the way it's going across the board spectrum of the IT devices, because it needs to be this way, because, again, we're adding features so quickly, we're adding updates, we're fixing patches, we want this to be out in the public, in the hands, in the users' hands as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and look, I think the fear of not being able to provide the updates to users, absolutely, that's not the case. We basically will have 4 months between those different branches, right? And it's kind of like a funnel. All right, so you have time. What it means, though, for the IT professionals, that by the time you actually get you get a build to the current branch for business, then there's already been a whole bunch of testing that's gone on. So it's going to really alleviate a lot of that app compat issues that we had in the past, so that you, as an IT professional, you don't have to actually do as much around making sure your apps are going to work, because along all these different branches of these rings that we have, we've done a lot of that testing. But it still allows the IT professional to control how the updates go out in their organization. So there is a lot for the IT professional here for Windows 10 for them to do. There's a lot for you guys to be able to on-sell to your customers, to be able to get involved with that. We're going to have a store for business, right? So you'll be able to sell not only Windows 32 apps, but also modern apps in the store. And you'll have what it allows customers to do is to have a store within a store. Okay, so it allows to have a private store for the applications in the public store. So there's also that's being able to sell the applications in the store as well. So there's you know how we had the company portal in Windows 8.1, and that was kind of a pain in the neck. And then there was the sideloading of applications and all that kind of stuff. Well, it'll be a lot easier for you as an IT professional or as a reseller to be able to get those apps out to the users in a what we call the store for business.
And I think also too, part of it is a psychological thing too. I think that there's a lot of positivity out there. There's a lot of talk about upgrading. I mean, a lot of people have held off potentially not going to Windows 8 for whatever reason, so they're on Windows 7. So I think that there's a lot of positivity that especially IT pros can generate by, getting familiar with Windows 10, using it, showing their customers, getting all to the new features, helping them progress forward. Because again, you're able to provide a lot of services, a lot of benefits around this. And again, getting them onto this platform, like you said, that will give them the base to continually move forward on a regular basis is really the way of the future, and doing that as soon as possible is a great opportunity, because eventually they are going to go in that direction. So the sooner the better, and I think that's the thing. It's part of embracing, the new way of doing things and new operating and being excited about it, because there are so many, like I said, new features, new updates, and I think that's very, very enticing from a customer's point of view. There's a lot
Oh,
of
yeah.
pent-up demand I've found from customers who really, want to make this leap.
Yeah, there's a lot, and for you guys, there's a lot for you guys to show people on the operating system itself. I mean, there's so much to show people and to really get excited about. I mean, the first thing obviously is the start button is very similar to what people have in Windows 7, but it has a little bit of the Windows 8 stuff in there as well. The idea for the from a moving to the interface side of things is that, I mean, you were on the coalface of how people disliked Windows 8. And that was because it was such a I don't want to say revolutionary, but it was such a change from what people were used to, and it moved to this full screen model that people weren't ready for. Okay, so you think about Windows, the UI hadn't changed since Windows 95, really. I mean, if you think about we from Windows 3.1.1, we went from this type of interface to the start. Remember when the start menu came out, that was a big change, and so much so we had to actually, you know, show people where to actually start, click this button to begin and all that kind of stuff. But that ultimately did not change fundamentally till Windows 8, as in we removed the start button, then we brought this kind of half a start button back and all this kind of stuff. And what Windows 10 does is it brings that start button back based on the type of device you have, right? So today I'm sitting on a ThinkPad X1 Carbon, which is a fairly common laptop that we use internally. And that's got a UI that is makes sense for that device, right? And what we call desktop mode is where that actually sits. If I'm on a 2-in-1 device like a Surface Pro 3, it'll switch between tablet mode, it'll switch between desktop mode very, very seamlessly for the user. If I'm on an 8-inch device, it'll give me the interface that makes sense for that device. If I'm on a phone, it'll give me the interface that's the same for that device. The big thing about Windows 10 is that it's a one converged platform all the way from IoT type devices all the way up to Surface Hub, which was released on July 1st, all the way to Xbox, and it'll adapt to the interface for that particular device. And that's a big thing for users, is that they will get the right interface for the device they're using. And that's one of the things they're saying is that when you've probably got a lot of users running Windows 7 today?
Yeah, probably the majority. I mean, there's still, you know, the bulk of the people who are comfortable, who are probably, you know, the average user in the middle of the bell curve. They're definitely on Windows 7. There are obviously some, I suppose, early adopters, if you want to call them, a bit further down the thing on Windows 8. And my point about Windows 8 what I saw was that if you spent 10 minutes showing people around the Windows 8 interface how it worked and removed that fear, they were fine. So I have my parents using it. They had no dramas after having a bit of hesitation, but I spent 15 minutes with them showing them how everything works, and if they get caught, they hit the Windows button. So I think that was sort of what was missing, and why, you're right, it was such a change, and Microsoft was perhaps forcing the change and people didn't like that. But again, I think this is another opportunity, is this ability to familiarize yourself as an IT pro and go in and say, look, these are all the great features, this is how you do the basics, let me help you set it up the way you want it. And I mean, that 15 minutes pays dividends forever and ever. So again, that's what I would plan to do again. I think it's going to be a lot more simpler, and people perhaps will pick it up and run with it, and that's why there's the positivity there. But again, I still can't get over the fact that they need to have that initial training just to alleviate that fear.
Yeah, and we didn't have anything in Windows 8 that showed people what was new in the operating system out of the gate, and that was what was difficult. All of a sudden, they had this interface, and they went, "Well, what do I do now?" And you sitting down with them for half an hour, or whatever, made all the world a difference. But what we have is a getting started app in Windows 10 that you might have seen, and you know that has a whole bunch of things that the new user is going to really love, because it's got the things that they need to understand about the new operating system. So if you're an IT professional, get yourself familiar with that app. Show people what they can do in that particular app. But if you're, the other thing that we did is, this is the first time we're allowing people to go from, say for example, going from Windows 7 directly to Windows 10. So that's the first time that we've been able to do a step upgrade. And that's not something we provided, because typically what you would have to do is you would have to go from, say, 7 to 8, to 8.1, to 10. And that was a barrier to upgrading, or just re-image the machine with Windows 10. And we tested this process because we had a customer in the US that wanted to go from Windows 7 to 8.1. And typically we didn't, and we went, oh, okay, so that's cool. You want to do that? So what we did is we created a hotfix. And the hotfix basically, and we learned a lot from that customer doing the upgrade from 7 to 8.1, and we baked that into Windows 10 and the upgrade. So you know now when you go, if you're running a Windows 7 machine and you go to insiders.windows.com and you register for the update, it downloads a little executable onto your machine. That is essentially a wrapper for a hotfix, and it's the hotfix that we did for this customer that allows you to do the upgrade directly from 7 to 10. And I've done that a number of times in virtual machines, and it works great. And it's going to be very familiar to people that were using Windows 7 that never made the jump to Windows 8. They're going to be very familiar with this interface. Now, for people that are running 8 or 8.1, they're also going to be familiar with this, because they're going to see the tiles that they had before. they're going to see the interface. You can switch to full screen if that's the interface that they like to have, or you can make the start button, you know, like it is in Windows 7. So we're giving people choice as to how they want. Like you said, I think you made a comment before, is that we were kind of forcing an interface on to people. And what we get now is that, think of Windows 10 as very malleable, very, very customizable to how the user wants it to be, and will adapt to the device that they have. You know, I have 8-inch devices. I have the baby Surface, which is the Surface 3 device, and I have a Surface Pro 3, and I have an X1 Carbon. I have a Windows 10, a phone running Windows 10, and it gives me the interface that makes sense for that device. And then we have the apps are all the same across those devices. One of the great things is that the mail and calendaring apps, well, Outlook apps, are all the same across all those different interfaces, which is fantastic.
Well, and I think, again, we now live in a world where the year-on-year growth of mobile devices is something at 40%, where the year-on-year growth of desktops is actually falling at, you know, something like 15 or 20%. So, again, we're now in a world where there are so many more mobile devices, so many more touch devices, and what I'm finding, again, is so many more people are mobile. You know, their workers work from home, they work from a coffee shop, they come in once a day, they need to be as productive as they can. They're not necessarily, you know, able to access IT support directly, you know, go around the water cooler and ask somebody for help. So it's a very different world, and I think that's a very, you know, it's difficult to manage. But I think Windows 10, again, with the base in the base that has been laid in previous operating systems, is now beginning to show fruition and is now beginning to you know, basically prove Microsoft right in the way that, you know, you've taken some bets on the way technology's gone, and with Windows 8, perhaps the touch devices weren't out there on the market soon enough for the take advantage of the operating system, but, you know, a couple of years down the track and now look at it, we're now seeing that and you're able to take full advantage of that. So I think that's the big change that we're looking at, is just the way, again, that people actually do their jobs now is completely different, even from 3 to 4 years ago. The mobility that I see day in and day out, and the majority of stuff, even on Office 365, the people that access it on a mobile device just blows me away. It's amazing.
Well, they're saying now that work is not a place you go to. Work is something you do.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter where you are. And, you know, that's kind of where the type of world we're in. And if you look at, I think we recently did some study, there were some studies by Forrester and others in regards to how people actually work. And if you look at it, 56%, and this is based on a study that was done, is that 56% of people send their first email before they arrive in the office. They send their last email of the day after leaving the office. And there's something around, and this is in 2014, 350 million mobile devices, or BYOD devices. You see a lot of people bringing their own devices, using their own devices for work. And, you know, how can we make that an easier experience? And we've done a lot of stuff in Windows 10. I don't know if you've downloaded the ADK, which is the deployment toolkit for Windows 10. There is a new tool in there called the Windows Imaging and Configuration Designer. And what that allows you to do is to take a BYOD device. And this is the biggest bugbear we have, is say, you know, a BYOD device comes with, say, the professional version of Windows 10 on it, right? User wants to use that for work. So the IT guy goes, oh, geez, you know, we have an enterprise image. I'm going to have to re-image it with the enterprise version. Well, what we do with Windows 10 is that, with the Image Configuration Designer, is that we can put a package down on that device to make that device turn it into an enterprise device. And we have the ability to basically go into the Image Configuration Designer, create a package that has an enterprise key. Okay? And what we do is we add that package to that machine without re-imaging the machine. And this is what we call provisioning, not re-imaging. So basically, a package gets pushed down to that machine via removable media, share, whatever it may be, reboots, and all of a sudden it's enterprise. Bang. No rebuilding of the machine. That's kind of the world we're moving into. And that's something the IT professional can get involved in, is be able to, hey, you can use your BYOD device, no problem, Mr. Customer. Let me just put this package on it. We'll put down the apps that you need to use for the enterprise. We'll put the right license key for that device to turn it into an enterprise device. And bang, the users can use that device for work. So that's new in the ADK, and the ADK is downloadable from insiders.windows.com, and in Image Configuration Designer is there, and you can have a look at that. It's really interesting what we're doing in that space as well, around provisioning of devices, because there's so many people bringing their own devices to work, and that's a big thing.
Yeah, and again, I think that's sort of the world we're seeing in, and that's the world that we, you know, IT pros, you know, have to deal with. And I think part of it is embracing the tools that, like I said, that are available and make that easier. There's obviously a bit of a learning curve, but I think the other thing too is the information around that, and the Windows 10 stuff has been out for a while, and obviously, you know, it's made available to people to do exactly this, to get familiar with, to start playing with, to understand, because, you know, again, as I keep saying, as I certainly see the demand from, you know, the general user wanting this as soon as it's available, and with it, you know, basically able to reserve your copy, I think a lot of people are going to take that up. So on day one, we're certainly going to see a very large uptake, like it or not. And the best way to deal with it is to be proactive, get on the front foot, and talk to people about it and help them understand, you know, how to do it and how to get the most out of it.
Have you seen Satya Nadella's quote in regards to Windows?
Yeah, I think I did. What was it?
We want to move people from needing Windows.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
To wanting Windows, to loving Windows.
Yep. And I think that, yeah, and it is a great step forward. It really is.
It is. And I think Microsoft has had their challenges with operating systems over the last few years. And look, it's hard. I mean, it's not to develop an operating system. We have 1.5 billion people running Windows today. You know, it's like trying to order pizza for a billion people. It's, you're always going to get somebody that doesn't like what you're actually doing. And look, we've received millions of pieces of feedback from our insiders. I hope that you have put feedback in there along the way, because we're finding that there's a much more open way that we're developing this operating system in collaboration with a very, very large community of passionate users that want to see a great operating system and make it you want to be enjoyable when you're using, because how many hours of day do we spend sitting on our rear ends in front of a computer? You know, let's make it enjoyable at least. And be able to have fun and enjoy what you're actually doing. You know, so that's the other thing that we're trying to make it, is that you're going to love using this operating system, as opposed to having to use it as a tool.
And the other thing too is, I think that it's certainly going to, if you're in the ecosystem, it's going to follow you settings. So for example, you're going to see on your Xbox and your Windows Phone. We're also talking about a Windows Phone upgrade again, to Windows 10. That's obviously a little bit further down the track perhaps, but that's also coming together. So I think, again, this coalescing of the operating system and the spread across devices, you know, makes a lot of sense, and again, makes it much more comfortable for users to work with and basically do a lot of things they need to do on any device, whether that's, you know, the Xbox, whether that's the phone or whatever, and a tablet or a Surface. I think, you know, that's a big thing, and part of that, again, the opportunity is embracing that and being first to market and being able to sell that as an IT pro, those skills, because, again, unfortunately, I'm not seeing a great take-up generally by the IT pros of this operating system, because, you know, they've got other things to do and busy. But, again, I see it's such a great opportunity they really need to get into.
Yeah, look, and right now is a good time. If you're talking to colleagues, right now is a very, very good time to jump on the boat, because we just released the ISOs for build 162, build 10.162, and very, very solid. I'm running it on a home machine right now, and it's great. It's a really good time for people to, because there's enough time for an IT professional now to get ahead of the curve still, because we're still a few weeks out, and it's a good time to jump on and have a very solid experience. But this is a journey we've been on when you think about the converged platform. You remember when we had Windows 7, we had different kernels for phone. We converged this at Windows 8. So we had Windows Phone 8, Windows 8, and we started Windows 10 is really a culmination of us taking a whole bunch of different kernels we had in a number of different areas, Xbox, Windows Phone, Windows, and converging that down to one kernel that runs on different devices. And Dave Glover, who is one of our developer evangelists, has been doing a lot of work in the IoT space. So we support Windows 10 on the Raspberry Pi now. So and right up to the Surface Hub. you know, that collaboration device that we've released on July 1st, is that we develop an interface that's right for the device. And that's the big change. And then along with universal apps is a big thing, making sure that the apps are consistent across all the devices. And I think that's a big strength that we have that nobody else has, is that we have multiple types of platforms with, one, the same apps and the same operating system. That's huge.
Well, yeah, I think, again, what we're seeing now is a shift, you know, as we've talked about before, about Microsoft now is to going back to being its roots and focusing on being a software company and getting its software on all its platforms. And one of the exciting things I see using the Office 365 is Office on Android, Office on Android tablets, Office on iOS. And it's like, guys, this is the way to do it, you know, because the hardware to an extent isn't that important and it's going to get refreshed. But, you know, again, this is the app that actually lets people do their job and they need to work on multiple devices. So, again, seeing a big uptake in that, big embracement of those sort of things. And, again, the other side of the thing that really, you know, that I'm really excited about, things like Power BI, where you've now got this interface over the top and you've got all these connectors to Office 365, to, you know, SQL, to Azure, and it's pulling it all together and just making it work really well. And, again, pointing to Excel probably being the world's most common application that's on every desktop that, that especially IT pros, I believe, can take advantage of that and build a skill set around that. So again, so much opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the universal apps, I mean, we started that whole change came when Satya Nadella became CEO, is that it's the new Microsoft. We are a software company and we're making sure that our applications, particularly Office, was where the users are. And first off, users are on iOS, right? We all know that, and that's the way life is, right? So people are on iOS. We need to get a version of Office that runs on iOS. Check, did that. People are on Android. Yep, we're gonna get Office on Android, right? Next, you know, and now you're seeing on Windows 10, there is the modern versions of Excel, PowerPoint, and Word for touch devices. And they're not just dumbed down versions of the applications. They're extremely useful versions of the applications that are designed for that particular interface. You know, and then on a Windows 10 phone, you get the same experience. You have a version of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint on Windows 10 phone that's exactly the same as the one you would run on your Surface. So think about that from a user perspective, how productive they can be. And so if I was an IT professional, I'd be understanding these apps across all those different platforms and say, hey, Mr. User, look at this. Combine it with OneDrive. It doesn't matter what device you have, and you'll get a great experience across all those devices. And I think that was a major shift from what Microsoft did in the past, is to be where the users are, and be a software company.
Yeah, and I think that shift also needs to be made by a lot of resellers. They're still very much locked into a traditional way of doing things. And, you know, to Microsoft's credit, they have taken that change and shift. And, you know, again, you've taken a few lumps along the way. But, again, the focus has been there. The move forward, you know, has happened. And we're getting to see the results now. I think, again, IT pros need to look at that. So, you know, it's not going to be easy. And I'm going to have some the bumps along the way and relearn some stuff and maybe not do some stuff. But, again, if you look at it pragmatically, the opportunity, and from Microsoft's point of view, I mean, think how much more opportunity there is if your software is on every single device. I mean, it's just simple business logic. Your market's so much bigger, and I think that applies, you know, down to the reseller who's now sort of, you know, oh, what do I do? I'm a bit hesitant. I think, again, the reality is that, you know, these changes are with us and going to be with us the way forward, and we need to embrace that and make slight changes to adapt to that. But the opportunities far outweigh any downside.
Yeah, yeah. Can we touch on security as only because that's a fairly big part of Windows 10?
Yep, let's talk about the security side.
Yeah, as our last piece, because it's I think security is the most important thing. And one of the pillars that we're doing with Windows 10 is to protect against modern security threats. And if you look at the evolution of attacks, we are in a world now where, say, cast your time back to, say, 2003, 2004. Remember the script kiddies that were out there, things like Blaster and Slammer and all that kind of stuff? You know, those kind of things were those kind of attacks were just, you know, I'm going to make a name for myself in the hacking community, to where we're 2005 to present, we're talking about cybercrime, organized crime, and their motive is profit. To now, 2012 and beyond, we're talking about nation states activist terror groups, IP theft, damage, disruption, and there's a number of attacks that you can talk about. Sony got attacked. You probably heard about this. Mm-hmm. And it was a 9/11 style of attack on movie theaters that they were talking about. The White House got attacked in the State Department breach. And the thing about it is a lot of organizations think that they're protected when they're not. Right. So with Windows 10, we knew that modern security required a new platform. All right. So first of all, on Windows 7, from an identity protection point of view, we rely on passwords. How many of you use you deal with users all the time, right? They Yep. probably rely on a password. They probably put the password up on a sticky note somewhere. The credentials are very, very easy to steal. Passwords are evil. We're moving away from passwords. That's the biggest change in Windows 10, is that we're going to have a platform that it's very easy to deploy multi-factor, two-factor authentication with Windows Hello, Microsoft Passport, and also Enterprise Credential Protection. Okay, so we're going to be making biometrics. Biometrics is going to be mainstream. So Windows Hello is a new technology for authentication. We'll use biometrics for that, basically using fingerprint authentication, iris, and facial recognition. So we're working with, you might have heard of Intel's coming out with this, what they call this RealSense camera technology, 3D camera technology.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what it means is that you step in front of the PC, it recognizes your face, and it logs you on. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're moving to that type of scenario, and Passport is going to be the mechanism. And so we're moving away from this scenario where your credentials are stored across a network wire, right? So the credentials are going to be local. So that's a big change to where we were before. And so we're gonna move away. So we're gonna get your users familiar with using PINs as opposed to passwords,
mm-hmm.
okay? And get them familiar. One of the biggest things an IT pro can get their head around mm-hmm. is this new security platform. Mm-hmm. So from a data protection point of view, we had to go and do manual provisioning of drive encryption. You know, we introduced BitLocker in Windows 10. In Windows 7, it wasn't taken up very, very well. It was a bit difficult. But it also did not prevent DLP type scenarios, data loss prevention, because even if a machine was BitLockered, a user could come in with a USB key, take that data somewhere else, and that data was not protected when it left the platform. So one of the things we're doing with Windows 10 is obviously all new devices will have automatic disk encryption and fully integrated data loss protection. This is what we call enterprise data protection. So what this is going to do is prevent. So when you take data on a USB key, data protection will follow that device. Remember the encrypting file system that we used to have?
Yep.
It's very much similar to that, but it's going to be something that's automatic.
Right.
Okay. The other thing that we're doing is another technology called Device Guard. Okay. So what we found in Windows, have you ever had a user or a family member get tricked into an email that looks very, very legitimate from a bank or from
parcel delivery or something?
Yeah. So hey, you know, you yep. click this link. Yeah, we need to yep. update your records and yep. bank some sort of yep. thing runs on their machine.
Yep.
Well, in Windows 7, apps were trusted until after the threat was detected. Oftentimes, this was too late, right? And when you think about antivirus right now, you probably do a lot in the antivirus space. We cannot keep up with the rate of new threats. With the threats that are going on right now, virus software just cannot keep up. So Device Guard is going to be configured so that apps have to prove trust first. All right. So what it'll mean is we are going to disrupt one of the most common cyber crime type scenarios, which is a fake email gets sent and a user clicks on it and it does something to their system. Either encrypts it. So Device Guard will say, hey, this is not an application that's trusted.
Yep.
I'm not going to run it.
Yep.
Windows Defender is going to have some stuff added into it around cloud-based protection. And the other thing we're going to be doing, and you're familiar with this yourself, is Hyper-V
mm-hmm.
is going to be used for hardware-based isolation. Okay, so this is what we call virtual secure mode. And what this means is that we're going to move parts of the kernel, parts of the local system, think of the local system account, that's going to be moved into a virtual part of the open. So that means we just eliminate that as an attack vector completely. So that's where this is revolutionary. What we're and I know I sound probably like a marketing guy when I say it, but it is just freaking huge what we're doing in the security space. And this is this Microsoft is basically saying we have had enough of all this crap going on, and we are putting in some stuff that's really going to disrupt what's going on. So for you, for this is why we want to get so many people onto Windows 10 out of the gate. Because once you move on to Windows 10, we're going to eliminate so many attack vectors for you to get, you know, I've been hearing a lot of, have you heard all these things around ransomware?
Yeah, they're cool. Yeah, when you think about it as a business model, it works pretty well for a lot of people.
Did you hear, I don't know if you use Plex. Plex is a...
like a contact tool or whatever.
Plex is a media, basically, at home. And their forums were attacked. This is the forums that they use for people to and basically it's been held to ransom by ransomware.
Oh, okay.
And they're being asked to pay Bitcoin, otherwise they won't release the
the keys. The thing.
So, you know, so we're doing a lot of stuff doing a whole bunch of stuff in the operating system to protect against these particular scenarios. And it is big.
Well, I think also too. I mean, I'm seeing that also too in the Office 365 with advanced threat protection. Again, I'm beginning to see that, you know, Microsoft are working very hard to ensure that these common vectors, you know, are removed. Because as you say, the antivirus stuff is just reactive. It just can't keep up. I mean, the crypto locker just gets through everywhere because again, users are easily able to be tricked. And again, that's all the action that's needed to create such a devastating result. So
and the thing is that that's because most of the operating systems out there right now are older operating systems that were built around a time when this stuff wasn't happening. And basically what they're doing is most of the attacks are very, very simple types of attacks, okay? But they're based on what was available at the time, and it's easy for – and they're very well-known, easy ways to actually think. So think about it right now, and you talk about costs. Password reset costs these days, up to 30% of help desk's overall cost are basically password resets. Mm-hmm. And they're $25. They're estimated to be $25 per incident. So with Windows Hello and Microsoft Passport, we can eliminate that whole having to reset passwords and all this kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So the other thing is around leakage of corporate data. If you look at the average cost of $640,000 per company per year, and it's a 23% increase over the last 12 months, and these are based on studies that have been done by Gartner and others, that's going to be addressed by enterprise data protection, because right now, how many people do you know use RMS?
Yeah, not a lot.
Nobody, right? So enterprise data protection, something that's turned on by default, the user doesn't have to think about it. They put a USB drive into their machine, take the data with them. Doesn't matter because enterprise data protection is going to travel with the data so that the user can't get into that. And then the other thing is around the average cost of cybercrime per company was $12.7 million this year. And so with Passport, hardware-based Hyper-V isolation, we're just taking this out of the equation. We're going to disrupt these guys so that they can't do it anymore. And that's why we're so we have such a bold goal around getting 1 billion people onto Windows 10 in the first year and a half. That's why we're doing that, is because we need to change what's going on out there right now. And I encourage you, if you haven't had a chance, and your listeners as well, to go and watch the security sessions from Ignite. And there's a very, very good session by Chris Hallam, who is in the security team. That'll just turn a light bulb on for you. If you haven't had a light bulb on already, that'll just be like, oh my God, I have to be running Windows 10. Right. And that, barring the stuff that's really nice and, you know, pretty about the operating system, that being making sure that your data is protected, everything is protected on your machine, you just have to be running Windows 10. And you know, that's something as a leader in the industry, Microsoft has decided to do, and where that's the bit that, in my opinion, biggest area is around security. Absolutely.
Cool. Oh, well, I think at the end of the day, there's just so much, as we've can illustrate here, that can be covered in Windows 10. But we do have to round it off for this session. What I'll get Jeff to do is just give us a quick summary of the main points of why Windows 10 you should be doing the upgrade or looking at the upgrade or getting involved with it. Any contact details he wants to share with us as well, and then we'll round up for this episode.
Maybe we could have a part two.
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking is again, there's so much here that we can cover, and I'll get this out as quickly as possible. Maybe try and get people to give us some feedback. They can ask some questions, maybe, and we can do that as well. But I
Look,
think it's a huge topic.
yeah, and I think we could look. The thing about Windows 10, there's a few areas that, if I had to summarize, first of all, the UX is going to be familiar, and you're not going to have as a huge a training burden on users that have used an operating system like Windows 7, so that they're going to be ultimately familiar with the operating system. Deployment is going to be easier. It's going to have more options. It's going to be we're going to accelerate the user's ability to get to Windows 10. The number of devices that users will be able to use will scale to the different type of device that a user has. So that's going to be very big for pick a device. You're going to get a UI that's going to be relevant to that device, and of course, security is a big area. You're going to be in a much better place in regards to protecting your data and also having a much more secure user experience. And look, we've got, if I had to, final area is that you've got a new browser in there to play with, and you got a better browser. And funny thing is, I saw a quote the other day on Twitter. That this guy was basically at the point where he could drop Chrome as his browser and replace it with Edge. I've never heard that about anybody saying that about a Microsoft browser in the last 10 years.
Interesting.
And he did an article about, why he thought, he said obviously early on it wasn't, but now it's getting to the point where he's like, well, I don't need to use Chrome anymore. And because we're going to add that whole, what is it, plugins thing?
Extensions.
Yeah, we're going to add that further on down the track with Edge as well. So we're going to have an extensions platform coming very soon for that as well. So it's going to be big. And in the early studies, early speed tests for Edge is that it's faster than IE, it's faster than a lot of browsers that are currently out there. So we're in a good place right now with that.
Yeah, so there's again a huge amount of products, huge amount of opportunities, whether you're an end user or whether you're an IT pro, I think. So get in and use it, as I think is Jeff's saying. So how can people find out what you're doing, what you're up to, how to get in contact with you, Jeff, if we can?
Well, they can get in contact with me via my about.me page. So if you go to http about.me/jeffa36, JEFFA36, that will have a link to my blog, which is my IT Pro blog, my TechNet blog. It has a link to my Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, all that kind of stuff. So everything is there to get in touch with me. From a Windows 10 point of view, if what I would suggest for users today, before the release on the 20, if they're getting ready for Windows 10, is make sure you migrate to IE11 if you're on an older platform. If you're on Windows 7, pilot Windows 10 right now in your different groups. Join the Insiders program. So at insiders.windows.com, that'll have all the information for you to test Windows right now. So that'll get you ready for what's coming on, and yeah, ultimately provide feedback, because it's a two-way dialogue going on right now. That's a big change. It's not just provide feedback and we'll listen to it. It's different than what it was in the past.
Well, I think the important thing too is you can whinge and complain all you want, but unless you actually tell somebody or let people know that there are issues, that it's not going to get fixed. So I think that's a big feedback in a lot of products. I hear a lot of people, this isn't good, that isn't good, and the next question is, well, who have you sent that to? What have you done with it? Who have you actually, And again, they don't have to obviously implement it, but again, they're not going to even know unless you
That's
speak up
right.
about it and let people
So.
know. So again, it's a social world, Jeff, isn't it?
Well, one of the great things about Windows 10 right now is that as you use the operating system in the builds that are out now, is it'll say to you, it'll pop up on you, what do you think of this build? What do you think of the quality of this build? Tell us. And it'll load the feedback application, allow you to kind of just hit a radial button and say, oh, I'll give it a 4, and then provide a little bit of feedback. Takes you 2 seconds, and we'll surface that to you in the feedback app. So go in there, provide the feedback, see if the feedback's already been provided, get involved. That's how you're going to build your copy of Windows to be how you want it to be. And look, there's been changes made, based on the feedback that we've received from customers. And look, I'm happy to do another session focused on a particular part of Windows 10, because I think there's a number of areas that are that we haven't even probably covered yet. So happy to do as many of these as you need to think that we can, you know, so that we can cover off the topics that your listeners want to hear about.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll thank Jeff for that. We'll certainly take him up on that offer. We'll throw it out to the community and get people to give us some questions and what they'd like to see, what they'd like to understand, and then we can come back and reschedule that again with Jeff. But take the opportunity to thank him for his time today. Thank everybody else for listening to this episode. You can reach out to me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA or go to my blog at blog.ciaops.com. But with that, I'll call this episode to an end and thank everybody for listening. You've been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.